If you are here for the first time or you haven't been here often, my name is Bob Schull. I'm the senior high youth pastor here. I work with Justine and Lee. We are a team and an awesome group of volunteer staff who really are the backbone of our youth ministry here. We are doing a series right now on relationships. We do that in the spring. We try to take different approaches at it because, honestly, when I look at life, there are two big decisions in life. One is what you're going to do with Jesus. Knowing about him is not enough. Thinking he's God is not enough. Jesus says to all of us, I am the way, the truth, and the life. How do you finish that statement? No one comes to the Father but by me. Right. And so there's one thing left. I grew up a religious kid, and I knew about Jesus, and I didn't know what to do with him, and I kind of bagged it until I got really bad. And I finally had to come back to him and say, God, okay, now's the time. Tell me either you're there and there's something I'm supposed to do or I'm just kind of cruising on. And it was then that I realized that what Jesus was offering was not a life of religious rules. He was basically saying, I died for you. I paid for all of your sins. Do you want me to take them away, the payment of the sins that you've done, all the ones you've never even thought about yet, take away your sin and begin a relationship with you, come inside you and give you the power to live this life? And I said, I think I want that. I think I need that. So that's decision one. And if you haven't made that decision, that is really the big deal, that we stand in the gap to make sure people at least hear it. We respect your opportunity to evaluate and make decisions for yourself. But we find that most people do not know that God isn't mad at them or waiting them to do some big long list or prove something or get good, that he actually says, just as you are right now, I would like to begin a relationship. Do you want what I've done for you? So that's one. Number two, I believe, in terms of what your life is about, is really in the area of relationships, if and who you marry. We talked for week one. I know that there is a state in which you're in right now, which is not, it is student. That is a state you're in. You are in Virginia. You're also in the state of singleness. And some of you guys are desperately trying to get out of that state. To become Facebook official and not be single anymore and all that kind of stuff. Or Twitter legit or whatever. So, but the reality is, God says, that's not a good plan. He says, in your singleness, realize there's some freedoms that you have that you can take advantage of that when later when you have, you know, a committed relationship that you're just not able to do. So enjoy what you have right now. And this is the time to really build the foundation of your life. So it's the time to go deep, especially with those who will go deep with you. And honestly, I would say if guys want to go deep, they need, the Bible talks about, you know, men sharpening men. Men can go at it in a good way and help each other really go somewhere. And women the same way. Why? Because you know and understand each other. Sometimes when you try to do that, you know, with a guy, with a girl, sometimes there's just other things that kind of come up, you know, feelings and other things that just kind of like, okay, let's DTR this. You know, like, what are we doing here? So anyway, the second one is if and who you marry. And the reality is, if statistics tell us, of those who marry, 50% fail. That should be a clue to you. I mean, 50% in your English class is not a good grade. Right? 50% in life, in marriage, is not a good grade. And of the other 50% that stay together, I would not say they're all healthy. So you're getting down to, you know, I don't know what that percentage is, but there's a group of people who are married who are enjoying what it's about, and it's not a lot. So my question to you is, what do you want? Do you want that or not? I want to bring up the story of Esau. And it's one of those in Genesis that I am thankful God doesn't hide people and make everybody perfect. You know, he puts very real people who make really real decisions, and sometimes they're really stupid. But okay, so here's the story that in the Jewish culture, the firstborn son would be the one who would get the title to all of the land, all of the wealth, and the responsibility to use that then to care for the family, okay? So that is the blessing of the firstborn, okay? So here's the story of Esau. It says that he was a big guy. He was an outdoorsy guy. He was reddish in complexion and hair. He was very hairy. You know those people who are hairy in a lot of places, you know. He was very hairy, and he had a passion. He loved to hunt, and he loved to eat. And it said one day, and his brother was the exact opposite. He was the skinny little nerd guy who didn't go outside a lot, but he loved to cook, and he was smart, and he was cunning, and all these other things. His name was Joseph, or Jacob. And so Esau comes in one time, and he says to his brother, I have been out, you know, hunting, and I am so famished. I've got to have something to eat. And as it goes, I think Jacob said, well, what's it worth to you? And he goes, I'll give you my blessing. You know, the blessing, the big deal. You know, my ability to have everything. I'm going to give it to you for a bowl of your stew, which is so crazy good. Now, I like good food. And sometimes it's worth paying a little more for good food. However, he did that. And he lost the blessing. And it says that he went back to God, you know, again and again saying, God, I'm sorry, I repent, I'm sorry. And God said, can't do that back, can't take that back. And here's why I bring it up. You all have a blessing. Your Father, who is good and desires to bless you beyond what you'll even be willing to even comprehend, the Bible says. He says he wants to bless you with something that is so fantastic you can't imagine it. But the world, your peers, pressure, a lot of factors move you to be like Esau and say, I'll sell what is really worth waiting, fighting for something right now. And unfortunately, when you do that, a lot of times what it ends up doing is it's not the blessing you thought it was. Matter of fact, that was how I came to Christ. I was in what I would describe as a very immoral relationship. I was a good kid, didn't smoke, didn't drink, didn't do drugs. But in a relationship, I went places I knew I shouldn't. And you know what eventually happens is, out of the right context, it only breeds insecurity, and eventually it breaks. And then it changes the way you view yourself, and you move on from there, many times multiplying that in other relationships. And that's why God said, that's not a great plan. But I want to challenge you, don't be like Esau, who is so willing to cash in something really significant for something really not worth it. But that takes wisdom. And I want you to know, just like in salvation, this is a choice that you have to determine for yourself. Do you believe in Jesus Christ and who he is and what he's done for you? And will you take that? The second part, in terms of relationships and you, in terms of who and if and who you're going to marry in the future, that's something you're going to get to choose. And unfortunately, it's one of the scariest things of life that we have the ability to totally screw up our own life. But I respect you in it. And I'm thankful that you let us talk on things like this. I'll never forget a couple years ago, somebody told me that a friend of theirs was sitting in here and we were actually talking about sex. And we don't hold back to say, let's talk about real things, you know. And so we talked about it. And this girl texted her friend and said, I can't believe it. I'm sitting in church and they're talking about sex. And it's like, and then they got back and said, that was pretty funny. But anyway, but it was kind of funny, you know, but like, I appreciate that you let me talk about relationships. I know you could blow me off. You could blow your parents off. You can go like, I know what I want, and I'm going to do it. And you're absolutely right. You can do your own thing. I just hope, in God's mercy, you will hear the Lord. You know, because I, you know, everything I say is not what God says. I try to be close to it, but I want you to hear God. So here's where I want to start out. The dream. Okay, the dream is real. Okay, we talked about last week when we looked at dating. It was interesting to me, you know, when I showed you the picture of Cinderella and Beauty and the Beast. Those were all characters who had character qualities about them. They were good. You know, you'd want to date a girl who was like Cinderella. You'd want to marry the guy like Prince Charming, the Beast after he changed, you know, and that kind of thing. Those are really cool. But here's the thing. The dream of a knight in shining armor riding up to save and rescue his fair damsel or princess. Is it only in the fairy tales? Is it only in Disney? No, it actually is something that God put on your heart. In the heart of every young man, if you were to read Wild at Heart, this is one of the chapters in there. It says, every young man wants to be that knight who goes and pursues and rescues a fair damsel. That's what guys want to do. It's wired into us, okay? And they want to find that woman of character and be that man of fearlessness that will rescue him. But that starts with, honestly, guys, that starts with us right now, being that knight who protects girls, even from ourselves and from others who are going to try to take something from them that's not rightfully theirs. Secondly, it's in the heart of every young woman to be chosen, to be pursued, to be valued. That's what you girls want. You want somebody who takes the leadership and say, you matter. You're not just beautiful. I love you. I want a relationship with you. And you're like, oh yeah, I want that. And so the fairy tale of I'm up in the castle and I'm Rapunzel with my really long hair and will someone save me from this life? It's so tragic. It's really bad. But you want that, and that's something God put there. Because that's what leadership in a relationship should look like, where a guy does pursue you in a right way. But it starts with a woman who first realizes she is chosen, pursued, and wanted by God. And so she doesn't have to sell out for some guy who approximates this little pursuit thing. And I'll tell you where this thing is going. But I have the word up there, the dream. It's kind of small because, unfortunately, some people, that's their view of the dream. They're like, yeah, it's maybe, I don't know. But the cool thing is that God puts that on our heart, and it still happens. It happened for my son Daniel and his wife now. And they were at summer camp a couple years ago. Some of you might remember them, Dan and Allie. But I came to my son the day of his wedding, and I just looked him square in the face. And I said, Daniel, thank you for doing it right and allowing all of us to enjoy it. This is a fairy tale wedding. I feel like with my wife Lisa and I, on our wedding day, it was an incredible day. I wasn't worried. I wasn't uptight. I wasn't anxious. I was enjoying the grace of God with all of my friends. It was incredible. And that's exactly the way it should be, and that's the way it can be. But let me give you an update, okay? No pun intended, okay? An update. So, on dating. The reality is, today, compared to the last generation, this generation is dating 20% less. And it's interesting. These are the reasons they're giving, because you guys are more used to being on the phone than in person. You're pressured to perform, getting the grades, that long-term relationships don't make sense. I thought that was an interesting statement. And that the world seems so scary, let's just take it slow. Okay? But this is a person who's a psychology professor at San Diego State who's author of this book. So catch this title: Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. I don't think that's a compliment, you know. But what they're trying to say there is, because it seems like you're not relationally engaging, you aren't preparing for some of the things that God wants that, you know, need to be in your future. Secondly, I want to clear up one thing, because from last week, I need you to understand that I don't personally think, and I don't think biblically, I think that dating, the way it's defined today, I know that the way it's defined today is not God's will, okay? And if you look at the roots of it and the goals of it, I think you should be able to go, yeah, I see that. But I want to be clear that you can date in a godly way, okay? I have seen a few examples that have done that. And some who have dated in that way didn't date real long, and some of those who dated that way got married. It was really kind of cool. But here's what I will tell you. If you want to date, it has a lot of landmines. But here's some things you need to do. You can date if God is truly leading you to do it. And I think that actually knocks out a lot of them. Secondly, if you truly keep God first, his kingdom and his righteousness first, if that's really your goal, you're pursuing his priorities, awesome. If both of you agree to be under your authorities and be transparent and accountable to those authorities, awesome, that can work. If you're able to treat each other with absolute purity and to stay far away from temptation, that would be important. And lastly, if you're willing to stop when God says stop, which, unless he's really got a long-term path for you, he probably will. Whether God says stop, your authority stays stop, or your spirit says, I need to stop. Because, and we'll talk about, at some point, you need to love that other person enough to know that if I'm not that person, then why would I, you know, demand something that I shouldn't? So instead of choosing to date, I would encourage you to go countercultural and do what I call dating on purpose, or the old-fashioned word called courting. So courting is where you wait for the right person at the right time for the right reason for the right glory, which is God's. So the reason you should choose to do relationships differently is because you respect these things. Okay, and that's what I'm going to talk about today. Number one, you respect, some of this is a little bit of review. You respect the promise. The promise is Hebrews 11:6. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. If anyone comes to God, he must first believe that he exists, by definition. But secondly, notice what he says, and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. Satan is always trying to redefine your view of God. You know, he told Adam and Eve, he's holding out. He knows you can become like God, so don't follow him, eat the fruit. And unfortunately, they followed him. So Luke 7 says, given it will be given to you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. In other words, you cannot outgive God in any area of your life. And the last one, I think it's really cool. It's Matthew 7, where he says, if you being evil know how to give good gifts, how much more your heavenly Father knows how to give good gifts to those who ask him. Throughout the Bible, God openly declares and openly demonstrates his ability to bless, and God wants to bless you in this area of your life. The question is, do you believe that enough to follow him? It's a great question. Number two, the warning. It's interesting that we look at Proverbs 4:23. Above all else, in other words, big deal, keep your heart, guard your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. There's two things going on there. There's the general reality that this time in your youth, there are a lot of things going after your heart, not just a guy, not just a girl, but a lot of temptations, a lot of, you know, like the desire to get rich, the desire to be famous, the desire to be noticed, the desire to be accepted. You're striving to perform, to say, I matter. God says, be careful where you're starting to give your heart, because that will direct your life. But the second one we looked at last week as well, he calls it out. He says, at this time of your life, flee youthful lusts. There are lusts at this time of your life. The warning is that you need to really take note of, because Satan is not stupid. If he can't get you to like not follow God, he will direct you in a way that will take away. He will steal, kill, and destroy. And unfortunately, I see him winning way too much. And it's almost like, if we know he's coming after me there, why in the world wouldn't I take note? It's interesting to me. There's two guys that I knew a number of years ago. One of them was a friend of one of my sons. And I remember we went out to Chipotle. And the one of them was a guy who I'd known for a while. He'd been around the group and whatnot. So during the time there, I was really reaching out to his friend. And it was interesting. This guy was huge. He was like 6'3". You know, he could eat two Chipotle meals and not think about it. But he had been around, and he was asking questions. So I was talking about God and talking about how to have a relationship with God, how to be forgiven. And one thing led to another, and he accepted Christ. And in the process of that, I realized his friend, who had been in the youth group for a while, also accepted Christ. And it was incredible. I was like, wow, this is good. So we were talking, and I was like, okay, here's what you need to do. You need to really just start your relationship with God. You need to let him talk to you, which is why you would read the Bible. And you need to be reminded that you're not an idiot for following God. And it was really weird. And I don't know if you've ever had this happen, but I felt like God impressed on me something that, and I don't do this all the time. This was out of character. But I said to both of them, I said, I don't know why I feel this, but I need to tell you, do not start a dating relationship with anyone for a while, okay? I just feel like God is wanting me to say that. And they're like, okay, right, whatever. So a week later, both of them start a dating relationship. And I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, you know, I'm not trying to play God. I just felt like God wanted me to say that. One of them, the youth group guy, knew that this girl was not who his parents wanted him to date. And a lot of reasons and all this kind of stuff. 3 years later, they got married. I'm still praying for them. She still does not know the Lord. And I pray God's good and God is merciful. But I feel like that was not a good move for him. His other friend started dating another girl who basically just turned his whole heart and direction away from God. Why do I bring that up? Because I'm not kidding when I say your love life is a target. And you don't, you know, anytime anyone shows interest in us, it is such a huge compliment that anyone likes you, okay? You've heard me say this before if you've been around me a long time. When I was 5, I told my mom, I said, Mom, I am so ugly. I don't think anyone will ever like me. Do you think anyone will ever like me? And as a mom, she says, oh, Bobby, someday you'll grow out of this ugliness. No, she didn't say that. She says, someday, you know, when it's right, it will happen. I'm like, okay. But anyway, it is such a compliment when someone says, I like you, you know, for however they say that. And it is so easy to get pulled into things. And that's why I want to tell you, the warning is real. You only get one shot. And honestly, I've seen a number of kids in this youth group who I've loved dearly become parents in high school. And I am thankful for those who take on that responsibility and don't just, you know, get rid of it. But it's life-changing. And that's not the reason to follow God. That's just a reality of Satan is trying to take away your innocence. He's trying to take away your future. He's robbing you. He's killing your desires. Guys, he's trying to basically take away your ability to respect yourself. This is a big area. So that's why I feel like God makes a big deal about it, and so do I. So third, the challenge. Okay? God challenges us with contentment. And I've got on the side of your handout there something that I heard a long time ago, and I hope both guys and girls will take this seriously. Okay, because this is absolutely true, and I think it helps kind of cut below what's going on around you sometimes. Love can always wait to give. But lust can never wait to get. And that's where true love, like if you look at married love, the thing that I have found, and it's exactly what God describes, even sexual love is more about giving than taking. But what is normal love is all about what I can get for me now. And so I want you to realize, girls, as you evaluate guys, if they're pressuring you to get, I would probably put that under the title of lust, not love. You know, because we talked about last week, you know, how God called Jacob to wait 7 years for his wife. And he said because of his love for her, it seemed like a few days. That's love. Love for me and Lisa was me comforting her as she's puking in the bathroom because she's pregnant with our third child and not thinking she's very beautiful and saying, no, you are absolutely beautiful from the inside out. That's love. It's not prom night, all dressed up. That's a feeling. It can be a part of love, but it's not the essence of love. So the challenge is contentment. God says, in this area, will you wait? Will you be content to be single until I change your status? So he says three things. Wait upon the Lord. Focus on him. Undistracted devotion. That's what you need to be doing now. Secondly, wait on the right time. Don't make a relationship or mate your goal or think that's where life starts. But ultimately say, I want to wait till I'm close enough to do something about this area when I do it. And then wait for God's provision. Now, I'm going to read you some from Proverbs chapter 5. Because here, I think God in several places makes it clear that really in his desire for you in a relationship, it's singular, it's one. Our world says multiple, as many as you can. You know, it's an educational thing. You know, date around so you know what girls are like. You can find out what girls are like without actually dating them. Make sure you're physically compatible. I will guarantee you, the woman you marry, you will be physically compatible. And one of the greatest joys is if you and she, he and she, can discover it together, giving each other a sense of intimacy. But check this out. I'll kind of give you a heads up here. Should your springs overflow in the streets? Now, springs is a sexual illusion, and you can figure that one out. Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in the public squares, let them be yours alone, never shared with strangers. May the fountain, again, a sexual reference, be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. And for them, that meant the woman you're marrying probably at about 16, because that's when you were, you know, 16 to 20. So, but look what he says. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be intoxicated with her love. My son, why be intoxicated with another man's wife? Why embrace the bosom of a wayward woman? For your ways are in full view of the Lord, full view of the Lord, and examines all your paths. There's a woman named Kristen Hull. She married a guy named Alvin. It's a great chipmunk name. But He was a guy from Pennsylvania. He was a farm kid, and he's one of the guys that really spoke to me. He ended up going to Papua New Guinea, one of the most remote places in the world. He went into a tribe by himself because he was fully committed. I want these people who don't know who God is, don't have the Bible in their language, I want them to hear about Jesus. So he went in there, and in 3 years, he found two things. He was able to get enough of it translated, shared it with the group. And one of the older women in the group said, I asked God a long time ago, before I die, tell me who you are and what you want. And she became a Christian. It's phenomenal. The second thing he found is that it is incredibly lonely to be in a tribe, A, without any fellowship around you. He would have to trek out at times just to even talk to someone who knew Jesus. And so he came off that, and we met when he came back, and he was a mess. He's like, God, Bob, I just can't do it. It's just so, so hard. I can't go back alone. I know God's called me there, but it's too hard. It's beyond me. And so he had a plan. He said, Bob, I'm going to spend the next 6 months looking for a wife. And I said, Alvin, I'm not sure how that works. How's that going to happen? Really? And he said, I don't know, but I'm just going to trust God. So I'm like, okay, I'll pray for you. So at the end of the 6 months, he calls me and he goes, Bob, I found her. I'm like, oh no. How did this happen? And he said, it was kind of cool. And long story short, I can tell you the long version if you want to hear it, but the crazy cool thing is, as he was going to the churches that were supporting him and telling his vision and meeting different people, he was keeping his eye open. He just said, Lord, I'm looking. Do you have that person for me? Well, anyway, there was one church where there was this one girl who he just felt an interest in, and they got talking and whatnot. And so he just said, hey, can I write you? And so they did. And then at one point, she stopped writing. And that was challenging for him. And so he ended up coming back to me. He goes, I think I found her, but I don't think it's going anywhere. And he said, all right, I'll go back. So he went back. He calls me about a month later, and he goes, I'm coming home. I'm courting that woman that wrote, that I told you about. I'm like, what? What do you do? What is this? And he goes, well, what happened is I sent her a letter, and it never got to her. And so she thought I stopped communicating. But then she communicated to me, and so he comes home, and here's the deal. Her story was this. When she was in high school, she said, God, I have no time. She said, I want to follow you, and I want to pursue you. I want to know what you were calling me to do, and I want to do that. And I do not have time or the emotional capital to invest in a lot of stupid dating relationships, in her terms. She said, I just want you to tell me who it is at the right time, and just let me marry that person. And she went on her way. Well, she was in a remote place, and who thinks like anybody's going to come across her path there? She was already out of college and whatnot, just being faithful. And so when Alvin showed up, I think God said this, gave her an interest that way. So when they figured out that he had written, and they started writing back and forth, and then I finally got to meet her, I was impressed, because I said, that was incredibly mature. And the thing I'd love to show you, I was looking for it, I couldn't find it, but I think they have about 6 kids. She went back with him to the mission field, and God answered his prayer and answered her prayer. The dream is real, but he waits for those who are willing to let him drive it. It does take conviction, and it's not easy, but God is really good. And if you're willing to trust him, I think that's incredible. So waiting for God's provision, I think, is well worth it. Then next, the wisdom of authority. The wisdom that God has in authority, an interesting note is sin is defined by going my own way. So that's why authority is such a big deal, because it's driven by sin. So number one, we're all under authority, no matter who you are. Secondly, God's design for relationships has authority and submission in every one. I'll show you that in a minute. The role of authority has actually got 3 reasons, okay? At least 3, maybe more. But God's saying it's to allow for protection, number one. Authority provides protection. Number two, for provision, the authority has the right to be in charge, but must provide. Like I mentioned, the oldest son needed to provide for his family. And then the third one is for growth, that they're the ones who not only just maintain, that they're the ones who are looking to help develop and grow beyond it. So I want to compare real quickly for you. It's on your sheet. It's probably really small, and I wrote it all in. We'll skip that. No, that's next. So stay with this. So comparison of the different different relationships, and ultimately showing how dating is different. So you see 3 categories: responsibility, blessing, and commitment. Under marriage, the responsibility of a husband is to love Christ, love his wife as Christ loves the church. That's my responsibility for Lisa. The blessing I have is a sense of oneness, that I get to enjoy a relationship with her. That is awesome. But that is body, soul, and spirit. I also get to enjoy her care for me. We do life together. My commitment to her is, I will do this till I die. That's a pretty strong commitment. Secondly, hers, submit to me as unto Christ. enjoying the same oneness, body, soul, spirit, intimacy, and care till death she does part. So there's a clear responsibility of what I do, and there's more to it. That's just the summary. There's many more blessings than that, but it all hinges on the commitment. Secondly, in a family, you as a child, you're given the responsibility to honor and obey. Not if your parents deserve it, not if they're nice to you. It's all the time. And God says, by doing that, being in a family, they provide for you food, clothing, housing, etc. They protect you. They're trying to look out for you. They are trying to help your growth, whether it's in school or in sports or other things. And what is the commitment? Well, it's the family bond that is pretty deep. Then, in terms of work, as an employee, I work as unto the Lord. That's my commitment. God says, do what you do at work, but do it as though you're doing it to me. Be honest, be ethical. And ultimately, as a Christian, in my employment, I am trying to seek that whoever employs me is benefited. I want their success. That is my goal, is their success, not mine. Okay? Now, the blessing is I get paid. I get to make a livelihood. And in that, there's provision and there's protection for me that I'm able to get through that. My commitment is, as I sign up, an employee agreement, I will not lie, steal, cheat you. I will be there on time. I'll do a good job. There is a commitment there. Okay? Even in the country that we live in, okay? You as a person, okay, you have the responsibility to vote, pay taxes, obey laws. You get the blessing of freedom, roads, an army defending you, and demands you to stand and pledge the allegiance often because you're committed to that country. So, dating. I just want to point this out, whether it's a guy or girl. Your responsibility within dating is not defined. A lot of people say, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Those are good things. But there's nowhere that it says, well, this is what you have to do, unless it's dad saying that to the boy. The blessing, there are no blessings given within an undefined relationship. And the ultimate reason is because there's no sufficient commitment. And that's what I want you to realize. That's why dating was tagged on in the 1930s to say, we don't want authority messing us. We don't want anyone to tell us no. I want who I want when I want it. And that's fine. But if that is the real heart behind dating, then it's like, I think there's got to be a different way, okay? So we're going to skip the verse and jump on to the next authority in marriage. Authority in marriage is a whole huge subject of its own, so I don't want to throw too much in here. But the reality is, God has said within a marriage, he has given the husband the role of headship or authority. He asked for the wife to respect and submit to the authority. Okay, and I'd encourage you to read Ephesians 5. But he parallels it and he says, husbands, in your leadership, in your headship, you need to love your wife like I do. Wife, as you submit to your husband, you need to do it like I do. Okay, and I'm going to jump down to where it says problem of authority to explain some of this. Because I think we all struggle with submission. And the way that God works this is he says, look, what I'm asking you to do is what I do. In the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, all equal, all God, undisputable. But in their function, as you read the word, it says that the Son submits to the Father. Jesus said of his Father, I do only what he tells me. That's a big deal. That would be called, if one of your friends, I only do what my dad tells me. Your thought might be, oh, that's wimpy. Right? Not for Jesus. He goes, that's the way it works. He's my authority. The Father tells me what to do. The Holy Spirit submits to the Son as the Son directs him. But notice this. So same in relationship in essence, different in function and role. And our world says if my relationship and my role aren't equal, I don't care because it tells me I'm inferior. And the reality is no, you're not inferior. It's the reality that in any... two cars on one road, at some point, someone's going to have to submit to the other to get around. Or they'll just have a head-on collision. And that's what happens in a lot of marriages. So God says, I know how to set up a relationship. I know how to do marriage. Trust me on this. So where do we go there for this in terms of what we're talking about? So the transfer of authority. Have you ever wondered at a wedding why they say, who gives this woman to be married? A, they don't ask that of the guy. Who's giving this guy up? They never ask that. It's not because the guy's worthless. Nobody wants to own him, give him away. It's an issue of authority, and there's a transfer of authority, okay? So in marriage, notice this. Genesis 3 says, it's not good for man to be alone. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother to establish his own authority and relationship with God. But the wife, as a daughter, you are under the authority of your dad until it's transferred to your husband. Now, in this culture, it's like, what? Freaking me out. I'll tell you how this works. My daughter is 29 years old. She called me 4 months ago. And she said, Dad, and this is something we've had all her life, and I also had it with Christy. She said, Dad, there's a guy who's interested in me. And I told him, before we go any further, he's going to have to talk to you. It's because she recognizes my role in her life, and she wants it, and she wants us to walk together in it. And so that is really awesome. I consider that a huge privilege. But there is a transfer of authority at marriage. And even as they grow older, there's still provision and protection as God designs that. So next is the commitment you can make now. And that's what I just described. Daughters, committing to seek the Lord in relationships with your father and mother. Talk to them, share your heart, ask them about guys. They actually know something about guys. Talk about your fears. Talk about what your dreams are. Allow God to work through your father to find the one. And I would say that even if your father does not know Jesus, I let my dad lead me in college, even though he did not know Jesus, and he mocked the idea of me going to a Bible college. I knew my God was big enough to turn the heart of a king. If he wanted me to go, he would do it in his time. And that's another long story. But I'll tell you what any dad can do that girls can't do. Guys can read guys. Guys can tell the guys who are full of it, full of themselves, have different motives or agendas. Girls, a lot of times, are very trusting, and they believe, he's a nice guy, and maybe he is. But a guy can usually read a guy and go, I'm not so sure, and kind of test that out. So listen to your dad, what he sees, and even what he senses without, proof. Require any guy who's going to have a relationship with you, whether it's dating or courting, to talk to your dad. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, and this is sad, I have seen girls who are well-meaning, have a great heart, and guys will ask them out, and they're like, no, I don't want to, and they'll do that over time. Eventually, a guy can wear a girl down. They're like, okay, one time, get it over with. And the reality is, if you're one-on-one in a dating relationship, I've seen this, I've experienced this, you can be whoever you want to be. You can be cool, you can be witty, sort of, if you have a chance. You can create all the environment, so you can come off really well. In a group, it's really hard to hide that, because you have to react to other people. So that's where I would say, have your dad be able to say no, because a dad can say no until the cows come home, and no guy's going to wear him out. So let your dad be that protection in your life to tell guys you know you really shouldn't be dating to say no. This also applies to sons. I think you need to sit down with your dads and talk about it from a guy's perspective. I also think, guys, if you're looking at a girl and evaluating her, your mom is a great source of wisdom, because women know women a lot better than you do, and they can see through it as well. Matter of fact, it's crazy. This is really crazy. I had dated a girl, or courted actually, a girl in college, and God said no, and so we broke up. And as I was just trying to mend my heart, I was doing things with a lot of kids, and I brought them back to my house. After the group left, my mom comes up to me, and she said, that girl, that's the girl you're going to marry. I'm like, Mom, what? I was nowhere near anything near it, and she called Lisa way before I did. And I'm like, get out of here, Mom. You're crazy, but it's so cool, and it's so awesome. So, but the reality is, if you involve your dad, that first line of permission will eventually, if it's the right one, be the second time at the wedding where he says, here is my daughter, she's yours. So, the pursuit. So, you're at that time, and actually this is kind of defining in your singleness. I am called to follow Jesus. He will put me on the path for his direction and calling. I am to do it with, 2 Timothy 2:22 says, those people who are pursuing righteousness, love, faith, and peace out of a pure heart. So I do it in the context of a group. I'm seeking the Lord. I'm doing it with a group of people who are seeking the Lord, but they're not just people. They're people who are pursuing righteousness, faith, love, and peace. Those are significant words and things out of a pure heart. That's a great group to be moving through life with. That's what you need to do now in your small groups and groups. You need to be bringing people in to walk with you that way. When you get to college, you need to be in a group that's helping you do that. It's absolutely essential. It's really cool. So, but here's what I would say to you. As you are going, this is the cool thing, that as you are going, God is leading you. I was talking to some guys this week about meditation, that God says, if you meditate day and night, I will bless you no matter what you do. Which is a crazy promise, but the reality is if I'm meditating, I'm letting God's word change my perspectives, my values, and he'll start leading me where he wants me. So in this process of I'm going somewhere, all right, and you're doing it with the people I described, here's the cool thing. At some point in your life, you look to the left, you look to the right, and you start realizing these are people with my same calling, my same passion, and the one might be somewhere around me right now. And a lot of times that happens in college, as you're picking where you're going, what you're doing, how God's a part of it. And honestly, when I was courting Tammy, that first girl I mentioned, part of us pursuing is she sensed she was called to missions. And I'm like, I know I'm open to missions, but I'm not called there. And so some of it is even helping move you away to go like, I don't want to defraud your calling if that's what you want. And so part of that was even seeing God's hand there. So the focus is not looking for the right one. It's focused on God, but the cool thing is that you get to see them. Next is your search is strategic, okay? I mentioned before, groups. In a group setting, you can see differences. You can see character because you're not able to control everything. Discerning who a person is, if you'll listen to this, the best way for you to discern who a person is and what they're about is before they know you have an interest. You understand that? If someone thinks you're interested, we all go to best behavior. I want you to think well of me. So the great thing is you're looking, you're evaluating, and girls, as a brother and sister relationships, you should be thinking through guys, what is this guy like? What motivates him? What gets him down? Is he a leader? You know, and you should be able to see a lot of those things. But you do it undercover. You do not, you know, junior high version, tell your friend to tell their friend to tell him you're interested. Don't do that. Keep it on the down low. Pretend like he's just another person in the room. But you're watching. I did that with Lisa. What are you looking for? Well, you're looking for these things. Spiritual maturity, okay? Not that they're just a Christian. There's a guy I knew when I was in high school. He had been at Virginia Tech and came back. His name was Ken. And I knew him kind of after the fact, but what he had done is he went to Tech, became part of Campus Crusade, came to Christ, started looking left and right, saw this girl, thought she was awesome, ended up marrying her. Ended their first year of marriage, she says to him, you know, I don't really buy this God thing. And his heart was broken. He thought, I thought I did it the right way. I thought I was doing it. They were divorced within the next year. And he came back so brokenhearted. And he's like, God. And the reality is, never assume. And that's why in this pursuit, as you're looking for not just a Christian, you're looking for someone who has some spiritual maturity that they're owning, okay? And let me throw it out. You have no business at all dating someone who is not a Christian. Because the reality is, if your motive should be, I want to really ultimately find the person I want to marry, you're setting yourself up for failure. And I've seen a lot of people do that. And that's, again, how a lot of times they get pulled from where God is trying to lead them. Secondly, you're looking for proven character. That is, proven character is what they do over time. You can be honest and you can be a lot of things for a short time. But over time, you're looking for, how would I define that person? Third one, calling and direction. Where are they going? When you talk to them about where's God burdening you, what do you want to do? That's a really big deal. Then lastly, the fit. Their habits, their preferences. There's a lot of crazy things that come into that. I mean, could you really marry someone who was not a Redskin fan? I mean, seriously. Two of my kids married Eagle fans. I'm still trying to deal with that. But it works out. But honestly, there's some things that you get down into. For, like, I'll tell you this. The girl that I thought I was going to marry, Tammy, I realized we did not fit. We were too similar. When we were down, we were both down. We couldn't help each other out. When we were up, it was really great. But I needed someone who could minister to me where I was, and we realized it wasn't then. So if you discern those things and they're in the zone, like, yeah, hey, that works. I think there's someone. That's when you start thinking, is that someone I'd be willing to court? To go into a relationship to evaluate if you really are the one, all the things I see think you are. So, but then the last thing is, you know, giving it time. It was interesting, you know, when Christy and my son-in-law Dave started, some of the things that I used as a father to even evaluate him, not knowing him very well, but here's some things he did. He, when he was down at JMU, he got into his own small group. He had his own walk. He went to a summer crew mission trip, which is pretty intense. He led his own, he created and led a service team to go out to do work beyond. I could see the way his values and priorities were. And I'm like, that's a good guy. And then I saw his character. And ultimately, you know what won me with Dave? He loved my daughter in a way that I see very few guys doing. And the funny thing was, he's very different than a lot of my sons. My sons are very athletic and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And when he came in, they were kind of like, who's this guy? And eventually they found out, this guy really loves our sister and does it in a way that it's not showy, but you just, he prefers her, he honors her, he gives to her, he serves her, and he's still doing it. It's really, really cool. So lastly, and I know I'm running out of time, but this is ultimately where I wanted to take you, the time. When it's time to court, what does that look like? Let me tell you real briefly what that looks like, okay? Courtship is defined as the act, period, or art of seeking God's will as to whom you should marry. That's God's definition. The world's is the act, period, or art of seeking the love of someone with the intent of marriage. So you're trying to find the right person at the right time for the right motive for God's glory. So in courtship, you've already figured out who they are. You've watched them from afar, okay? There's the ask. The guy should ask the girl, and this should not be a surprise, like out of the blue, I want to court you. Like, I don't even know you. You know, there should already be a friendship and knowing and whatnot. So it assumes that. But you're saying to her, do you feel the same way that we would like to enter a relationship where our goal is, let's find out, is this God's will? Now, that's pretty selective. You're not doing that with 10 people. You're like, I think you know, that's pretty selective. Then it's the ask part two. That guy then calls her father and says, would you give me permission to have that kind of focused time with him? When I called Lisa's father, veteran of World War II, artillery, hard of hearing, trying to describe this over the phone, his reaction was, I think, thinking I was asking if I could marry her. And it was like, no, I just want to spend time with her to get to know her better and pursue, see if that's what God's doing. So, but here's the goal. Your goal ultimately is to get to know them at that deeper level. But here's what I want you to understand. It's their spirit and their soul, okay? Mind, will, and emotions, not their body, okay? This is not the time like, okay, great, we get to enjoy every part of it. But it's an evaluation where the physical will only complicate and create tension. And I guess your guideline is old school. What would I be willing to do with her while grandma is sitting on the rocker next to me on the front porch? That's probably what you could do. Because you're still guarding your heart. And I think I want to throw out to you is you're still guarding your heart emotionally. That even in this relationship, you are not asking her the questions of her deepest needs and you're trying to figure them out. That's not your business yet. You're trying to find out, can I see in you the woman that I think I want to marry? Are you the guy that I want to marry? You're not trying to carry the ball because you haven't asked, you don't have the right to do that yet. So length of time, this might surprise you. When I've talked to the guys who've talked to me about talking to my daughters, I said two things. Actually, I said a lot of things, but two core things. One is to think about a timeline of about 6 months. In 6 months' time, you should be able to figure out, is God in this? And if it seems like he is and you want more time, that's great. But I challenged each of the guys. I said, if at any point you're not sure or you think it's a no, man up and say, I think we need to stop. That's great. You end as friends. Secondly, I said, don't touch her. Literally. Because I want you to learn how to communicate your care and understanding and whatnot without having to bring the physical into it. And we had follow-up discussions of, okay, do you mean? And like, yeah, I do mean. And so Then leadership. This is the time for God to show leadership, character, and here's the word that we don't use at all, but it's absolutely true. You need to woo her. That's actually a word. Okay? You make God the center of the relationship. You need to provide protection from temptation, wounding, or defrauding. You do not say, I love you, until you're willing to put a ring on it. Because those are power words that you, when you say it, it better mean there's a commitment coming with it. So that's why I would challenge you guys. But through your wooing, you show love through actions and your genuine care by what you do. So let me tell you how I courted Lisa. Okay? And under the umbrella of protection, okay, don't mock me. But so Lisa worked in the cafeteria, and she would get up really early. So what I would do is either I'd get up late at night or really early in the morning, and I would leave a note in the shoes she left on the rack because she had to have the working shoes. So she'd trade her real shoes for the white working shoes. So I'd leave a note in there just to communicate with her, but to say to her, you matter. I pulled some guys together, and we gathered in front of her window, and we serenaded her. And if you know the song, If, by Best of Bread, if a picture paints 1,000 words, then how do I paint you the love? You know, it's really good. So she got a kick out of that. I asked her a ton of questions, which instead of feeling interrogated, what she came back to me with, she said, I've never had anyone show me that much interest in my life to just want to know me at that level. I'm like, I do. And then one time, me and a couple other guys were friends, and we had girls that we were courting. I'll never forget, we created a banquet in the woods up near where our dorms were, and we did the cooking, and we got guys to be waiters, and got a friend of ours to play violin, and it was incredible. I just got to tell you, it was really awesome. But I wanted her to know, I really care for you as I'm pursuing you to find this out. I wooed her, okay? And but then the last thing is courtship conclusion. How do you know when they are the right one? Well, this is how you know. Number one, love means I want the best for you as much as I want the best for me. The girl that I thought I was going to marry, Tammy, when God said no, it was really painful for a lot of reasons. But ultimately, I had to say, if I love you enough, I want you to find the person that's really right for you. And if I love me enough, I need to be willing to wait for that person myself. But secondly, here's how you know if a person's it. When you've confirmed with both authorities and they're like, yeah, we think this is a good idea. Secondly, when on the big things and the small things, they all line up. They're like, yeah, you know, the big, you know, what we believe, our convictions, our purpose, our future, how many kids, you know, I mean, if she doesn't want to have kids and you want a lot, it's just not looking good. So if all of those things come out, I found myself at a place where I said, okay, God, how do I know? My wiring as a person, I'm a C personality, which says I want to know all my options before I make a decision. Well, I was not going to know all my options. There are millions of women in the world. How was I going to know all that? So I'm like, God, how do I make this choice? Here's what God said to me, and I feel like it was almost audible. He said, can you love her exactly the way she is right now? And I said, yeah. Knowing everything about her, I can. He says, then choose to love her and marry her. Love at that level is ultimately a choice. And it should be backed up by a lot of things you've worked through, and it's not blind, but at some point, I need you to realize it is a choice. And God does not give everyone the grace to love people where they are, and that's part of it. I have married a number of couples. The first couple I married, they couldn't answer that correctly. They said, no, I'm still trying to change. And I said, well, let's time out here. I'm not going to marry you until you can love each other that way. And they worked on that and realized, okay, I think they found that they could. But that's how you know that it is true love. Because the truth is, you could theoretically marry a number of different people. But I believe God is leading you to one, and if you're willing to do it God's way, you can. So the way I did it, just so you know, our favorite place was to go down to Jefferson Memorial in the evening, and so I was trying to do that on the night. I knew that before we graduated, I need to make a clear commitment to her. Even though I knew she had to go do her teaching certificate for a year and we'd be apart, I needed to let her know, I'm going to make a commitment. I'm not going to make you wait. And so there was a senior banquet, and a bunch of our friends all said, hey, let's go to this one house. And we're like, okay, we'll go. And I thought, well, then I'll go from there over. And it got to be late. So I told the wife, Mrs. Bowser, was her teacher, her education teacher. And I'm sorry I'm boring you, but I said to her husband, I said, we're going to help you clean up. Then could you guys go upstairs? And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah. So we clean up, and Mrs. Bowser's like, okay, well, you guys are going to go now? And like, she's like, come on, let's go. We got to go upstairs. And you know, she had no idea. So I wrote her a poem, and I didn't ask. She's in Buffalo now. I'll read you the poem if I get her permission. But I basically, in that poem, I asked her to marry me, and she said yes. It was sweet. So here's my chance to you. Here's my chance to you. The dream, it can be yours if you're willing to go God's way. Let me pray. Father, I thank you that you're a good and loving God. I thank you that you are a forgiving God. And God, I know for the ways that I totally messed up my life in this area and the way you gave me forgiveness. And God, I pray for anyone here today who may feel like, well, I've already blown it. God, I pray that you would enable them to come to you and deal with it and take that garbage to the cross and realize that you restore, you renew. And God, I pray that in this area, you give these young men and women a great deal of faith and courage to trust you and follow you. I pray against all the things that would love to have them cash in for something of greatly lesser value and harm. And God, I praise you that you pursue us and you do continue to want to give us good things. And I pray that for them in Jesus' name. Amen.